The podcast with everything paranormal. It's the 222 Paranormal Podcast, starring your host, Joe Shortridge, and his very short sister, me.
Oh.
Shorty.
Hello.
Shorty.
Welcome to the studio.
Joseph.
Yes.
Joseph Dean Shortridge. Yes.
Uh-huh.
What's up? What's going on?
Nothing.
What's new?
Nothing at all.
Well, welcome to the show, everybody.
Yeah.
Joe and I had some very interesting thing happen last week after we were taping last week's podcast, and we kind of wanted to share it with you guys because it was so exciting. But before that,
okay,
stay tuned for that. Joe's got a little story for you guys.
Oh, I've got some news.
Some exciting news.
Came out today that news about astronomers having received details on a mysterious signal emerging from a distant galaxy that is 1.5 billion light years away. So they received this signal. I mean, it was
one signal
or multiple? No, it was multiple signals. Oh. As if regular patterns.
It's interesting. They said everything that's random is actually a pattern, right?
Yeah.
So what happened 1.5 billion years
ago? It's not just like the wow signal that came and went. This is a signal that they're continuously getting. But they say it's from a space, 1.5 billion light years away. So it originated 1.5 billion years ago.
Maybe it's a dinosaur fart.
Yeah.
Maybe they just had some gas and they were like.
Swamp gas.
That's interesting, though. Does that mean there's something out there?
Well, 1.5 billion years ago there was.
Oh, all right.
It took that long for that signal to reach us. So they could, come on.
1. You can't 5. Even fathom that. How far away
too,
is that?
I think about that a lot, where we're looking at telescopes light years away, like billions of light years away, but we're looking out. And it had to take that signal that long to get here. So did it originate way back at that exact point where it's coming from? Or was it before that and now we're just receiving, but now that area has moved that much farther? So who knows?
I have no idea what you just said.
But for something, 1.5 billion years old, what's the sense in even trying to find out where it's from or that? Because it's... Even if there was a civilization that was smart enough to send out signals, they'd be long gone.
Well, yeah, 1.5 billion years ago, right? Okay.
So, anyways, that came out yesterday today that they received 13 radio bursts from that area. Another thing, China landed on the dark side of the moon.
They did?
Or the far side of the moon, we should say.
Did they have lights? Did they have their flashlights?
Yeah, they had the little flashlights.
Are they going to take their flashlights and just unscrew them a little bit so the aliens can use them to communicate?
Yeah, exactly. And it works.
Turn that light on!
Okay, now turn it off.
Okay, turn it on.
Okay, wait a minute. Go ahead and turn it off. Okay, turn it off. Okay. It went off. Okay. We're dorks.
<I know. laughs>
But anyhow, they landed and they have a rover moving around and they're taking pictures, and there's already controversy up there, saying people, conspiracy theorists, that they're seeing alien bases and all that. And yeah,
so we've never seen the dark side of the moon.
NASA has taken pictures of it.
Oh, okay.
And you go on YouTube and there's a lot of videos about the different buildings and everything that are on there. So who knows? I mean, come on. I can make a whole show about, which we should make a whole show about the moon.
Stay tuned for that. Yeah.
And it's actually hollow and it could be a spaceship.
It's the Death Star.
It could be.
Star Wars. Darth Vader's inside of it.
But I do know that when the Apollo astronauts were on the dark side of the moon, or I keep saying the dark side of the moon. This isn't Pink Floyd.
I keep thinking that when you say that. I'm like, don't play that music. Please don't. No. I don't want to hear it.
But on the far side of the moon, which we never see because it's tidal locked, the Apollo astronauts actually heard music. And it is a documented fact that they heard music.
Wow.
And, of course, you go on their site and everything, and NASA has explanations that it was wind going over when they were talking, whatever,
Yeah. Okay.
But they I mean, come on, the astronauts would know what wind sounds like and all that. They actually said, we hear music. Do you hear that? And the other astronaut, yeah, that I can hear music. And I don't know if it's true or not, but they said that the Chinese heard music also when they went up there.
Maybe it's Michael Jackson. He's moonwalking.
He is moonwalking.
But I'm bummed.
I need a rim shot on my little computer thing here.
Yes, definitely. Okay.
I do have the applause. If that's,
thank you. Yeah. Thank you very much. I'm here Tuesdays and Thursdays to drink minimum.
Yeah. So anyhow, last week after we got done recording that amazing show.
It was a good show.
Yeah. We got so much feedback. I cannot talk today. We got so much feedback about that show and different people asking, you know, different things about it.
It was a lot of rabbit holes off of that.
It was.
But Joe, tell everybody what happened.
So last week I was sitting here in my space, in my little corner. I'm against the wall facing the door to the studio. On the outside of the door to the studio, there's where my bedroom, bathroom, and kitchen or living room all come together. Because we are in my house. This my photography studio is now our podcasting studio.
Right. And I face the opposite. So I'm facing Joe, but I face a window. So yeah. I'm not seeing what he sees.
Mm-hmm.
I have a window, but at that time I was looking at Joe and not at what he was seeing. So tell everybody what you just saw.
I was sitting here and I could have swore I saw a blue light, and not like an orb, but just light as if the TV was on, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And just for a second. And I kind of didn't think nothing of it, but then I said, well, I think I just saw a blue light. So Jen gets out of her chair, goes over there and says it was ice cold right there.
So I walk over there and I'm standing in the spot where he saw like it was freezing cold, and not just because that, you know, the heat wasn't on or anything. Uh-huh. I mean, it was fairly warm that day. We were in the, what, probably in the 40s or 50s. Yeah. Freezing cold.
Probably 75 or 74 or somewhere around there.
Total goosebumps up and down both my arms, like electricity. I said, Joe, come over here. Stand right here. Feel this.
Yeah, I felt it too. And I got out my little temp gauge out of our ghost box.
Mm-hmm.
But I have it on Celsius, so I didn't know what it was.
So I'm like, okay, get me some ghost equipment. So mm-hmm. I grabbed the SB7 spirit box and my iPhone, and I put it on voice recorder. And let's play what we got, Joe.
All right.
Whose house am I in right now? I'm trying to confirm that you know who lives here.
So what did you think?
Isn't that weird? I mean, okay, so somebody might say, well, SB7, it just scans the radio frequencies and you hear stuff and that. And but
it's clearly that saying was clear, your name.
Yeah, clear. And what are the chances of a radio station being picked up at the exact time
mm-hmm.
saying, hi, Joe?
And the thing is when I use the spirit box, I don't extend the antenna out because I'm trying not to get the radio mm-hmm. frequencies, you know, so... Once again, strange things happen when we're in the studio.
What is the chance of a radio DJ out there saying, hey, Joe, right at the exact time you ask?
Right.
And when it's scanning over that frequency.
That was cool, wasn't it? Hey, that's ghost hunting, right?
And, you know, could have been Jackie, could have been anybody.
Yeah. Yeah.
You never know.
Joe's got attachments.
You know, I mean, I didn't hear this, you know. You
might want to.
I didn't hear the song.
If you guys don't know, that's Joe's sign from his best friend Jackie, who had passed away. Anytime he's thinking of her or wants a sign, he hears that song.
She used to play REO Speedwagon. She wore out the record. Then she wore out the tape. Then she wore out the CD. She played that song over and over and over. And that is the song I went after. I came back from Cleveland when I found out she passed away. The next morning, I got in my car. It was on a Detroit radio station, which I haven't listened to in a long time. And that song played the second I turned the radio on.
Oh my God.
And it has been ever since.
That's so cool.
So communication from the past, or not the past, but the people that have passed.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe we should talk about that on a show. I think we did, though.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's a personal connection. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like I always... don't want to be like rude to people, but like if you ever die, like can we have a signal so I know it's you and I know there's an afterlife? And, you know, Joe and I will have to set our signals up. Anyways, what's the topic of the show today? Hello.
Oh, we have a topic?
I guess.
So today is very gruesome.
Yeah.
And it's the only reason we really bring this up because of the hauntings and everything, and it's a famous murder, but the Villesca, is it Villesca or Villesca?
I think it's Villesca.
Axe Murder House.
Yeah, so we have not been there, but it's on our bucket list, right? As many paranormal people in the paranormal have that on their list. But, you know, so Joseph and Sarah Stillinger and their family had left their house on a Sunday morning to go to church. They had all planned to have dinner afterwards. So there were the mother, the father, two daughters, one son, and then there were two neighbor children that had come back to the house to spend the night. So approximately 8 o'clock, the services started, and there was some kind of play, children's play or something that they were doing. And so they came back somewhere between 9:45 and 10 o'clock in the evening into the house. Okay, so on June 9th and 10th of 1912, the bodies of the Moore family and two of the neighbors, the Stillinger daughters, were discovered by the Moore's brother. So what happened was the neighbor lady had noticed she was out early in the morning, as they do, you know, they go out and do chores.
Real early.
Early in the morning.
5 a.m. and she's doing laundry.
Yeah, so she's out there hanging up her laundry 5 o'clock in the morning and noticed that, you know, nobody's stirring around. So by 7-8 o'clock, they realized that, you know, nobody's coming out of the house, which was odd for that time. So she went in and called Mr. Moore's brother over to the house. Hey, come on over and check it out. So the brother comes over and he's knocking on the windows. He's knocking on the doors. Nobody's, you know, getting aroused. So
and he couldn't see in the windows because all the windows had window coverings. Mm-hmm. Like they couldn't tell what they, you know, like the shades were pulled down or whatever.
Yeah, they said all the curtains were drawn in the windows except for two, which did not have curtains. But those were covered with clothing belonging to the Moors, right? Weird, right? So so he takes his key, he goes in the house, he goes upstairs, and he opens the bedroom door and saw two bodies in the bed with dark stains on the bedclothes. He returns immediately to the porch and tells the neighbor to call the sheriff. The two bodies in the room downstairs were Lena Stillinger, 12, and Ina, her sister, say age 8, house guests of the Moore children. The remaining members of the Moore families were found upstairs in the bedrooms by City Marshal Hank Horton, who had arrived shortly after that. Every person in the house had been brutally murdered, their skulls crushed while they slept. Josiah Moore, 43, Sarah Montgomery Moore, 39, Herman Moore, age 11, Catherine Moore, age 9, Boyd Moore, age 7, Paul Moore, 5 years old, and then the two neighbor girls, Ina and Lena. Once the murders were discovered, the news traveled really quickly through town, right? So the neighbors, go ahead.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say that I found out that the phone operator in the town turned on the all call button that they had back then on the switchboard. And it ended up calling all the houses in town to tell them.
They didn't have Facebook, folks, so, you know.
No, the all-call button was their Facebook.
So interesting. Like, you know, I won't go down. I was going to go down a rabbit hole, and I'll save it for later. Okay, so 8 people were bludgeoned to death, presumably with an axe, at the crime scene. It had appeared they had all been asleep at the time of the murders. Doctors estimated the time of death somewhere shortly after midnight. So they came home between 9:45 and 10 o'clock. Yeah. The murders happened somewhere around midnight. All the curtains were drawn, like we said. All the victims' faces were covered with bedclothes after they were killed, which is odd. Mm-hmm. So, like, what would the FBI profile be on that?
Yeah.
You know, is that some
shame
kind of...
shame because they knew them?
Like, they didn't want to see their face?
Yeah. Didn't want to see what... they did to the bodies.
There was pictures online, but I was like, I didn't even want to look at them. Yeah. Like, I don't even want to see that image in my head, right? They said there was a kerosene lamp found at the foot of the bed of Josiah and Sarah. The chimney was off and the wick had been turned back. The chimney was found under the dresser. So I don't know if the chimney is what exactly that. So that maybe those
That's
are those
the glass,
lamp.
Okay. It's the glass part.
Okay.
You pull that off so you can fix the wick and everything.
Oh, okay.
Which is odd because if you just turn it down, it shuts off.
Mm-hmm.
But somehow the glass got off and rolled under.
Interesting. It didn't break. So the axe was found in the room occupied by the Stillinger girls. So those are the two little neighbor girls. It was bloody, but there had been an attempt to wipe it off. And the axe belonged to the owner, Josiah Moore. The ceilings in the parents' bedrooms and the children's room show gouge marks. So obviously somebody was upswinging with the axe, probably hitting the ceiling. So wouldn't you think they would have to be a very tall person?
Tall, yeah. But I looked at videos of the house and I can't really tell how tall the ceilings are. But, you know, a lot of, like, we go into the bone house and all that, and the ceilings are high.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Yeah, just depends on the place, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
A bloody pan of water was discovered on the kitchen table, as well as a plate of an uneaten food.
Yeah, it was, they said bacon.
Mm,
and they weren't sure if the person that killed him was going to take the bacon afterwards. That's up for debate. And the other piece of bacon that was found with the in the little girl's room, they had some weird thoughts about that too, which I'm not going to mention.
Yeah. So all the doors were locked. So whoever left either locked the door, crawled out a window, or something. Who knows? The bodies of Lena and Ina were found in the downstairs bedroom off the parlor. Ina was sleeping the closest to the wall, and then Lena was on the right side. A gray coat covered her face. Lena, according to an inquest testimony of Dr. F.S. Williams, lay as though she had kicked one foot out of the bed sideways with one hand up under the pillow on her right side, half sideways, not clear, but over just a little. Apparently, she had been struck in the head and squirmed down in the bed, perhaps one third of the way. Lena's nightgown slid up and she was wearing no undergarments. There was a blood stain on the inside of her right knee, which doctors assumed it was a defensive wound on her arm. So, yeah, here's the thing. The doctor, the coroner, reported a slab of bacon on the floor in the downstairs bedroom lying near the axe.
Yeah.
Weighing nearly 2 pounds, it was wrapped in what thought to be a dish towel. A second slab of bacon about the same size was found in the icebox. Like, what kind of sicko is, like, murdering people and like, oh, I'm going to take some bacon with me?
Yeah, and the thing is, besides the other thing that they thought that he was using it for with the children next to it, they think that he may have used it as a practice.
Oh.
But if that was the case, though, it wouldn't just be a regular slab of bacon. Wouldn't it be broken apart?
Yeah.
You know?
Do you really need practice to, like, whack people with axes? Yeah, like, okay. That's just me.
But you don't know what they're thinking, you know?
Well, yeah, obviously they're cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. So they're going around murdering children with an axe. So the coroner also made a note that one of Sarah's shoes was found on the side of Josiah's bed. Under the bed. The shoe was found on its side and it had blood inside as well as under it. It was the assumption of the coroner that the shoe had been upright when Josiah first was struck and the blood ran off the bed into that shoe. He believed the killer later returned to the bed to inflict additional blows and subsequently knocked the shoe over. Now they were saying here that if the murder had happened today, it was, almost certain that law enforcement would be easily be able to solve the crime. But, you know, this is almost 100 years old now. Actually, it's over 100 years old. 104. Wow, gosh, that's crazy. It's just, you know, it's like you hear about it so much. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't seem like it was 100 years ago.
And you know that he said that the murderer came back into the parents' bedroom after all the other murders. From what they understand, he murdered the parents first and then the kids and then came back and hit the parents' heads at least 20 to 30 times.
Oh, it's disgusting. Mm-hmm. Doesn't that sound like a crime of passion, though?
Yeah, almost? And that's why I was saying he covered all the faces up. That's a sure sign of that.
Yeah, weird. You wonder, like, Is that a religious thing, or is that more of like, you know, wow, we got to dig into that. Why do serial killers do stupid stuff like that? Whatever.
One bad thing about that, though, is after the word got out, before the coroner, I think it was before the coroner showed up, there was over 100 people inside that house, and they said they were trying to shoo them out, and they get them out one door, and more people come in the other doors because they all heard about the murders. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the shoe thing, where the axe was, all that, you know, all the evidence was thrown out the window, or whatever you want to say, because there were over 100 people trouncing around inside that house.
Wow. And who's to say the murderer wasn't in the house, and when all these people came in, they kind of just slipped in and with everybody else, and was like, you know.
Yeah.
Because a lot of times, go ahead.
Well, I was going to mention that they found 2 finished cigarettes up in the attic,
mm-hmm.
and a chair that was obviously moved, because they could see that, you know, mm-hmm. that the chair was sitting there with cigarette butts on the floor. So that person actually got in the house, went up in the attic, waited for them all to come home.
So he must have been watching them, knew that they were either at the church,
yep.
or went to the church. Mm-hmm. Now, there was a local druggist or chemist, you know what they called them back then, who tried to get in and take photos with his camera, but he got kicked out.
Yeah, that's one of the things. And I think it was because there were so many people around the house. And back then, they didn't think photos would be important. Yeah, you know? Like,
nowadays, it's like that's the first mm-hmm. thing. Everybody has their phone out, right? What about you in your research, Joe, had found out this wasn't the first axe murder that happened around there?
It's a common thing back then for murders to happen with axes.
Mm-hmm.
But the house is super close to the railroad. So they think that, you know, maybe a transient or mm-hmm. something. And along that Southern Pacific Railroad line, there were murders all along that Southern Pacific line that were done in the same fashion and same style as this murder, to where it was the people were, you know, bludgeoned to death with an axe. Windows and mirrors were covered up. The bodies were covered up.
Mm-hmm.
And the murderers spent time in the house. So, you know, to me, that just looks like
a serial killer.
Serial killer mm-hmm. traveling up and down the tracks.
Yeah, it seemed like that would be an easy way to get in and out of town real quick, you know, back then, you know, just hop on the rails. And
a lot of people ask, you know, why an axe? But there was one in every house.
Yeah, because everybody heated with wood. So you'd have to, yeah.
Now, an interesting fact that I found out about the town is the name Velasca mm-hmm. or Velisca in ancient Indian meant a place of evil spirits.
Wow.
Okay, so was the evil there before, or was it there after, you know?
Yeah, you wondered, like, if somebody is that, for lack of a better word, crazy mm-hmm. to do a murder like that, like, you know, are they possessed by something? Are they just insane? But, I mean, don't you think, well, this is a whole rabbit hole, but, like,
you know,
if somebody's that insane that they're murdering people with an axe, is it a possession? You know, is mental illness mm-hmm. a possession? It's not always a possession, but what other rational explanation can it be then, other than, you know, like, why? What's the point of murdering a whole family with an axe?
Mm-hmm. You don't know if the person was possessed or whatever, but there were several suspects, okay? And, like, Andrew Sawyer. So Andrew Sawyer is one of the suspects. He was a transient, and he actually was in town when the murders happened. He asked the railroad foreman for a job,
mm-hmm.
and he got it. And he was a suspect because nobody knew who he was. But it turned out that he had a good alibi. So, you know, he was finally said he mm-hmm. wasn't one of the suspects.
Now, this other suspect that we were reading about, Reverend George Kelly.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about him, Joe.
He was born, he was an English-born traveler, okay?
Mm-hmm.
What he did was he went around to different towns and did, like, tent revival type stuff.
Okay, yeah.
Okay, and he was also known as I don't want to say pedophile.
Pervert,
yeah. And he would do a lot of things that would make it seem like he was.
Mm-hmm.
The next morning, I mean, he was there during the murders. Next morning, he got on a train right away and left town. Now, people on the train said that he did mention the murders before the actual, you know, actual news got out.
Mm-hmm.
Once he found, or once the news got out, he acted like he wanted to know more about it. And he was actually asked about the murders, and he gave a lot of details that they say were not in the press by positioning and, you know, how they were murdered. How, I don't want to say how as in with an axe, but how.
Yeah, like, you know, where the blows were, yes, that type of thing.
Uh-huh. Where the clothing was, how the one girl was pulled down the bed, you know, stuff like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, like how would you know that?
And, you know, his reputation of being a pervert and all that, and I don't want to say pedophile because they never really said that,
yeah,
but the way that they described him made him sound like that. But he was also kind of crazy.
Mm-hmm.
He had mental issues.
Yeah.
And he was put in jail and everything for the crimes, but he eventually was acquitted.
Yeah, and then there was another one, Frank Jones. He was a Villisca resident, and he was a state senator, which is kind of odd those times to accuse somebody, you know, in a high-up position like that. But Josiah Moore had worked for Frank Jones in his implement store for many years, leaving to open his own store. And then, you know, Moore had taken business away from Fernando or Frank Jones's
Fernando,
his John Deere dealership. So Moore there was a rumor that Moore, who was murdered, the dad who was murdered, had an affair with Jones's daughter, but there was no evidence to support that. So, you know, like that, you know, that's a big thing, you know, like you taking business away from me and I'm going to get my revenge.
Yeah.
But,
well, okay, so word had it that Senator Jones actually hired someone to do the murder.
Mm.
Okay. He hired someone called William Blackie Mansfield. Okay. And it said that he murdered the Moore family. Okay. Now, Mansfield was believed to be a serial killer because later in life, he ended up killing his wife, his mother, and their infant child all in the same manner.
Oh my gosh.
As what happened with the Moore family. Same scenario, you know, with the blunt end of the axe while they're sleeping. You know, he covered up all the mirrors and all the windows with cloth. He covered the bodies up with cloth. So they feel that he was the one that did it. Now, Mansfield was released after a special grand jury refused to indicate him on grounds that his alibi checked out. Or 9 months before the murders in Villisca, a similar case occurred in Colorado Springs, Colorado. Two axe murder cases followed in Ellsworth, Kansas, Paola, Kansas. The cases were similar enough to raise the possibility of having been committed by the same person. So, like we said before, you know, these type of murders were happening all over at that time. So,
I wonder if anybody's pieced together the timeline of those and, like, maybe put the, you know, like, mapped in the railroad track and the timing of the railroads.
Well, they did. Okay. Yeah.
Now, there was another suspect, which is, this is what makes it so interesting. There's so many suspects.
Well, and also, when it actually happened, there were people coming out of the woodwork saying they did it.
Why? Why?
I don't know. Fame?
I don't know.
You know?
Yeah. Was it part of a cult where, like, all these serial killers in the same, like, secret society of, like, you have to axe murder somebody to be in our secret society? Who knows? So there was another one, Henry Lee Moore, who's not related to the Moore family, that was slain, but he was convicted of murdering his mother and grandmother a couple months afterwards, too. So, you know, it's like, this is like a thing going on? Like, was there, like, a portal to hell? Like, some demons unleashed or something? And then there was another one that Sam Moyer, who was the brother-in-law of the brother, had often threatened to kill the brother.
Oh.
But he had an alibi. So, you know, there's just not one clear suspect, which makes it so interesting. But don't you think by this time some psychic medium has been in there or done something and talked to these victims that, I mean, I don't know if they could identify them because they were all sleeping, but I think at some point somebody woke up and saw something happening.
Something. And it's believed that the murderer still haunts the house.
And that's takes us to, you know, why do we ghost hunt at this particular location? Obviously, you know, there was a murder there and that was tragic. What's the report? Is it, are people seeing ghosts in there? Are they,
they are
having activity?
I mean, EVPs, mm-hmm. all your, you know, everything you always hear about. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, doing the research, this is really interesting. So, you know, a lot of people have been in there. It's obviously, it's a public location mm-hmm. And people can go in and I think you can spend the night in there. Don't quote me on that, but you know, obviously they're going to let you ghost hunt during the night.
Yeah. All night ghost hunts.
This is so interesting, Joe. There was a ghost hunter who was in there, and he was just with a group of friends. So they were recreationally paranormal investigating, right?
Okay.
So I don't think it was like a serious like thing.
Yeah.
They were just in there. He was, this is like what they reported.
Okay.
Don't quote me. But he was alone in the northwest bedroom, and the rest of the people were outside. He called for help on his phone. Or like a two-way radio type okay. thing they had. And they found him. He had stabbed himself in the chest.
Oh.
Now, what would drive a 37-year-old man at a ghost hunt to stab himself in the chest? Right?
Well, like, we've talked about it before. You know, is it a portal to hell? I mean, is there so much evil in there that it compelled him to stab himself?
Yeah. So was the ghost of the killer still in there?
It's rumored that he is.
Are we going there? I think we need a road trip, Joseph. But yeah, like you said, there was EVPs caught there. You know, famously Ghost Adventures has been there and they did their whole show on it.
I didn't see that show.
I probably saw it, but I probably forgot. Yeah. You know, they had so many episodes. How do you remember them all, right? I don't know.
Zach's hair.
Uh-oh. We should do a show just on Zach's hair.
Yes. But, you know, I mean, it goes back to the same thing we keep saying over and over, is the location
mm-hmm.
or is it the events that cause the hauntings? Either way, it's still extremely haunted.
Yeah.
What, you know, there was a lot of axe murders going on at the same time. And is it a spirit possessing people to do it?
Mm-hmm.
Is a serial killer? Who knows? But we keep talking about, why is this one so different to where it's so haunted?
Yeah, I think, you know, obviously you got children.
Mm-hmm.
You have mysterious circumstances. You don't have a clear suspect. You have odd ritual behaviors of placing cloths over the face and mm-hmm. the windows. So, you know, and such a tragedy, you know, having 8 people murdered in one location.
And by all sense, they were all murdered and none of them woke up. Now, one of the things that they say is the murderer poisoned them or drugged them
mm-hmm.
so they wouldn't wake up. Poisoned their food is what they said.
Yeah, but how would he have done that? I mean, they, you know, you have 8 people who come into a house. Not all of them are going to eat something,
exactly.
right?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, was there a demon that came in and made, you know, like we talk about how people, what's it called, where you're sleeping, you can't, sleep paralysis,
mm-hmm.
but
yeah,
we talk about that on other shows where people have sleep paralysis and they'll see incubus and succubus and stuff like that. You know, I know we're going pretty far-fetched, but we're in the paranormal, folks. This is
right.
how we talk. But did a demon go in there and hold all them down while this person killed them?
Who knows?
You know,
you don't
that's
know.
The thing. You don't know.
Yeah, because what if they made a pact?
Mm-hmm.
What if that person was forced to do that? We'll never know.
Never know.
Unless we get some hard proof evidence, you know, like captured something on the EVP, mm-hmm. name the name of the killer, right?
Yeah.
Something to that effect.
And I've listened to so many different EVPs and that from this location, and a lot of them are, you know,
blips
we're still here, or, you know, why are you here? That kind of things. None of them say, you know, Beetlejuice or whatever, whoever the spirit is, you know?
Yeah.
They never mention the killer's name.
Yeah. So, you know, I would think if you're murdered, but you didn't see your murderer, don't you think there's something on the other side that would connect you, like, or you would have some knowledge of, like, at some point, like, okay, here's how I died and why I died and who killed me.
We don't know.
I don't know. Yeah. So obviously nobody in the, you know, the murderer is still not alive. That was 100 years ago. Yeah. There's no, I don't think, physical way that anybody could be still alive. But mm-hmm. don't you think at some point, this is what gets me about old time crimes. At some point in somebody's life who committed a bunch of crimes, you'd either want recognition for that
mm-hmm.
or you would want somebody at some point, like, okay, I'm going to die. Here's my diary.
Yeah.
I'll just, you know, confess to all my crimes.
But with all this stuff going on back then, mm-hmm. who's to say that their murderer wasn't killed?
Yeah, so in some other way.
Something else, well, yeah.
It'd be interesting to see the other locations of axe murderers around that time in the same manner. What's happening in those houses? Why isn't those houses being named?
One of the things that I think about is I think that it's more about the hype because this one here is so popularized. I mean, there's a giant sign outside of it.
Yeah.
There's
a
sign.
Do you think that's because of the ghost shows?
I think that the tourism aspect of it.
Let's talk 2 minutes, just 2 minutes about this whole tourism of ghost and haunted locations.
Yeah, what do they call it? Paratourism? No.
Yeah, something like that.
Something like that. Paratourism.
So to me, like, it's cool. I like to do it. I have paid a lot of money to, mm-hmm. you know, ghost hunt with Zach or whatever. And I don't know. I just have kind of this weird feeling like that's just for entertainment.
It is.
You know, like, it's entertainment. If you're a true paranormal investigator, you're going in somewhere. You just want to go in by yourself. You know, I don't recommend going in by yourself, but, yeah, you know, you're not going with 30 people with their iPhone apps.
Small groups and...
Yeah, like...
That is one thing that really bugs me when we've gone on these ghost hunts
mm-hmm.
and we show up and there's like 40 people there.
Using a blipping ghost app on their iPhone. Like, listen, people, the best...
Bing.
Yeah, you hear that for an hour. Ghosts aren't going to come around. You're annoying them with
I still think... if you're going to go for these ghost hunts, at least call them ghost tour or something. Yeah. But
it's not really an investigation,
no.
right? Like, it's, I don't know. It's one thing when you're putting, you know, the money is going to the location for mm-hmm. restoration or, you know.
One thing, you know, I say that a lot, and we mentioned about this house. Why is this house so, you know, haunted? Mm-hmm. It's like Gibbs Bridge. There's no
Gibbs
evidence
Bridge.
At all that
Joe,
it's haunted. But it's...
It's the legend, right?
Yeah.
That grows into the paranormal activity.
What do you mean, this?
But
do you mean this?
What's the name of this bridge? George is a Gibbs.
But
yeah,
it's
my
just
famous
like,
EVP.
It's just like Gibbs Bridge. There's absolutely proven fact that none of the stories actually happened there, but people are getting tons of activity there. Is it because there's so many people asking for that activity?
Maybe.
But with a lot of these places,
I'm always concerned they're going to bring something in
yeah.
that wasn't there. And then the ghosts that were originally there that maybe could communicate mm-hmm. with you and tell you what happened to them, then, you know, maybe they get pushed out or
that's possible.
Or don't want to open up because there's so many mm-hmm. people.
But I mean, I think at some of these places like Villisca and like the Shanley and that all advertised, we're haunted. Where the ghosts are and all that, and they have ghost hunts there every single night, you would think that by this time there'd be enough scientific evidence to prove that it's haunted.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Yeah. You know, I'm not saying it's a bad thing. You know, when I go ghost hunting, I don't want to go to necessarily capture evidence and be the person who got the evidence. I want to go for the experience.
Well, yeah.
I've seen full-body apparitions. Mm-hmm. I wasn't snapping pictures. It just happened.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's cool, but all right, we got to give our soapbox, Joe.
But
we heard this.
It all goes
times.
Back to the same thing with the Villisca Axe Murder House. We're trying to figure out why this one is so haunted. And personally, I think that the whole thing went down because there was either a demon or a deity or something in mm-hmm. that either possess the person that's traveling around killing people, or something happened in that house where they all were frozen in time or whatever, and, you know, like a sleep paralysis or whatever. Mm-hmm. Because you think about how loud it would have been, you know, an old creaky house, guy swinging an axe, hitting the ceiling. You know, once he started killing that first person, which they say were the parents, they would have made enough noise. I mean, think about how much.
Yeah.
Back in that day, you didn't have radios or nothing.
And the walls were thin.
Walls were thin. It was quiet out. You didn't have your neighbor leaf blowing.
Like Joe does all the time.
The noise in the house would have woke those kids up.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. What really happened? Anyways.
So we're going to have to go investigate.
Yeah.
So after like we just said about
if any of our listeners, you know, any of you guys listening have been there, tell us what your experiences are. You know, once we release a show, go on our Facebook page and give us your story. Like, what is your opinion of what happened there? And what did you experience? Did you have a personal experience? Interesting.
Yeah. Joe. Yeah. But yeah, that's a great idea. If you've been there, let us know what your experience is. Because we're talking about this from the outside looking in. We were never there yet.
Yeah, that's cool. Like, I'm really excited about, like, going to some haunted locations mm-hmm. this year. Like, you know, if you guys know of any really good investigations that are serious, give us a shout out on Facebook and let us know. Let us know where you guys are going ghost hunting. Or if you've been to the Villisca Axe House.
That's a big thing, yeah.
Let us know. We want to hear all about it for sure. That would be cool if you guys had some, like, personal experiences there.
And if you have any ideas for the show, let us know.
Yeah, there's a topic you guys want us to explore. We'll definitely dig in. I think last week's show, The Giant Skeletons, was so cool.
I got so much feedback.
That was awesome.
And I still am getting feedback, and it's leading to so many different rabbit holes.
Yeah, so we're going to have some, like, different type of shows coming up. Like, we're going to explore some really kind of different topics, not just ghost hunting. You know, we're going to have to, like, branch out a little bit, some rabbit holes, Joe. Anyways, that's our rambling for this week,
like
folks.
We said, so there's a lot of different ways you can get a hold of us. Facebook, our website.
Twitter.
Our hotline, which is 740-720-0225. Leave us a message on there. I did find out that it's limited to like 3 minutes.
Yeah, leave us a little ghost story. It'll be fun. Maybe we'll play it on there. And just let us know if it's okay to play it on there.
You can use your name, or you can, you know.
Use a fake. Just call yourself Zach. This is Zach. I have a ghost story.
Turd Ferguson. I don't know why. Okay. Before we end the show, I got to tell you about this rabbit hole. I was at work and the name Turd Ferguson just popped in my head. I don't know why.
Because you're a turd burglar.
So anyways, folks, thanks for listening to this week's Ramble Fest. And like we say, if you love the show, or if you even like the show, if you think the show might bring some happiness to someone else, pass it on.
Yeah, it's free. Share it on our social media. So we will talk to you all next week. Have a great week and happy ghost hunting.
And speaking about walls and ceilings, let's leave them with a little writing on the wall. All
right. 60-second crush. Detroit Rock.